cometh the hour. Cometh the mothership that is Coast to Coast AM. Well, happy fifth day of Christmas to you, if you're into it. I like having 12. Then we get to take some time off from stuff you don't want to do. And this would be New Year's Threeve. Three eves prior to the new year. John B. Wells in with you tonight for the last Saturday night program of 2012. What an agonizing year, yes? An excellent year in some ways. We got the whole 1221 thing out of the way and put to bed. But I'll tell you, it was fraught with angst and division, was it not? But you know, I was thinking about this. And it's like the more divided we become, the more clear the truth becomes. And the division shrinks. We'll get into that a little bit more. I think maybe when it's fully explained, those who do not embrace it may come to tonight from the website whatreallyhappened.com. Our first time guest for the first couple hours, Michael Rivero. Media censorship and how the U.S. government manipulates information to generate popular support for wars and military escalation. I'm going to make it a point to ask him, does that mean military escalation domestically too? But it does. And then for the final 2 hours, Al Fadi, a former Wahhabi Muslim from Saudi Arabia, researcher, editor, writer, translator for numerous ministries. And the topic of discussion with him tonight will be his desire to assist both Muslims and non-Muslims who seek to learn more about the Quran to research it, to critically analyze it, and to better comprehend its teachings without the traditional religious and cultural barriers. It's going to get cold up there in the Northeast again, that whole damage effect of Tropical Storm Sandy's not over with, and you know, it's winter in New York, you know, it's winter in the Northeast, we know what happens. It's not exactly string bikinis and Speedos up there at this time of year, but you know, another storm, so take care, watch out. Don't take anything for granted. Just get on the other side of it in one piece, please, you and your families. That would make us very, very happy. And, you know, there's just, I don't want to take away time with Michael, but I'm just, my brain is just a rambling thing tonight. Two, three things got my attention. All this ranting and raving over, we must ban assault weapons and we must ban high-capacity magazines. Why don't we just outlaw murder? Oh, that's right. We already did. It's not working too good. To get anybody else's attention that the rifle in question, let me make you smart on AR-15s real quick. That thing was developed in the early 60s, maybe even the late 50s, but certainly the very early 60s. The Air Force got it first. It was called the AR-15, Automatic Rifle 15. Once it was adopted for general use in the military, it became the M16 and went through several changes. Basically the same platform. They did this. They put a rail on it so you can make it as heavy as, you know, a grand piano on your back. Lights and lasers and magnifiers and blah, 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 and all that. Now they call it the M4, but it's the same gun. For so many years, particularly in the World War II era, both sides were just obsessed with coming up with a .22 caliber projectile. My sources, who I've made over many, many years, indicated to me that the only reason that cartridge was adopted, the .223, otherwise known as 5.56 by 45 millimeter. Case length 45 millimeters, diameter of bullet 5.56. Well, if you hit someone with this round, like say in a jungle situation, and you produce a fatality, what happens? Nothing. That soldier is out of commission. But if you wound one, it takes two others to carry him out. Follow me? But I don't think the Geneva Convention sang out about that one. It's just more of the history that we don't know that good old former President Harry S. Truman told us all about. Anyway, did it get anybody's attention that it was a Bushmaster? Bushmaster at Bushmaster up there in New York, Rochester, I think it was, where this idiot loon shoots two firefighters. The other idiot loon at the, or however many of them there were, at Newtown, Connecticut, and the idiot loon out there in Portland. Reports are Bushmaster, Bushmaster, Bushmasters, if that's like the new hot phrase. But the fact is that this is a pattern rifle. Many manufacturers make it. DPMS, Rock River, blah, 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 Armalite, everybody. Armalite developed it to begin with. Designed by Eugene Stoner. Anyway, I could bore you to tears with this, but if you want the straight dope on firearms, shoot me an email. I'll send you one back as time allows, because there's so much stupid disinformation out there. But the problem is that I just find it highly coincidental that these murderers in various parts of the country all just happen to come up with the same rifle. It's just really, really odd. Now, as Oliver Stone carries on with his untold history of the United States, he has gone publicly to say the U.S. has become an Orwellian state. Remember, we were talking about that last weekend. He says Obama was a great hope for change. And this is what he says. I think under the disguise of sheep's clothing, he has been a wolf. That because of the nightmare of the Bush presidency that preceded him. People forgave him a lot. There was a great hope for change. Color of his skin. The upbringing. The internationalism. There's a clue right there. The globalism. Ooh, there's another one. Seemed all evident. And he is an intelligent man. He has taken all the Bush changes and he basically put them into the establishment and has codified them. That's what's sad. So we are going into the second administration that's living outside the law, does not respect the law and the foundations of our system, and he's a constitutional lawyer. Well, who makes the best criminal defense lawyer? An inexperienced one or an experienced one that decides to practice that particular angle of the law? You know the answer to that. Without the law, it is the law of the jungle. Nuremberg existed for a reason, and there was a reason to have trials. There's a reason for due process. Habeas corpus, as they call it in the United States. Now, I did little bit parts in two of Oliver Stone's pictures. The beginning of JFK, you'll hear it, and also talk radio. It did not escape my notice that when depicting the assassin of Alan Berg, the radio talk show host, he was a real strident guy. It wasn't the skinhead Aryan Nations with the MAC-10 with the suppressor on it that was depicted in the movie. No, it was literally a big old bubba with really, really bad teeth. And where was he? In Dallas, Texas. Because Dallas killed Kennedy, right? No, wrong. All green tooth bubbas that come out of Texas. For example, Dan Rather came out of Houston. You know that? How about Bob Schieffer? He came out of Fort Worth. Scott Pelley came out of Dallas, blah, 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 blah. So listen, I think maybe we expected this 2012 awakening would just be like wham, all of a sudden there it is. Wow, the skies open up and there's, I don't know, for some people, a great big magnificent white bearded face is there, you know, and the big old blue eyes just shining down enlightenment all over everybody. Some people thought it was going to be a magnificent display of flying saucer aerobatics and the outstretched hand of a somewhat slightly creepy but altogether pretty much friendly little ET was going to enlighten us and all that. And sometimes these things take a little bit of time, and it looks to me like our enlightenment has become more and more evident with every passing day. Now let's talk about taxes. Gerard Depardieu, he said, I am not going to let this Francois Hollande socialist guy take 75% of my money. I'll blow. I'm going to Belgium. Well, guess what? France's Constitutional Council on Saturday rejected a 75% upper income tax rate to be introduced in 2013 in a setback to socialist President Francois Hollande's push to make the rich contribute more to cutting the public deficit. I think one of the things we might want to consider is that we very well may be in the post-worker era. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. Even the people who are putting things together in the manufacturing sector here. Now, for many of them, and to their credit, they're assembling products that are made entirely in this country. But those who are putting things together for sale here, and perhaps even distribution elsewhere, they know that the components that they're plugging in and wiring up and calibrating and making into actual consumer goods, a lot of it's made in China. Speaking of China, did you happen to hear about the hidden slave labor, please help us, hidden in Halloween decorations that go back years. It's a very, very strange and creepy thing. Now, how do I get out of the workers? The people who get their paychecks with the taxes taken out, they're going to see it. They're going to see a reduction in their money. Maybe a lot. It may be a little, but if you're already at the end of your string, any is too much. Let's make sure that in the future, whether we did this time or not, it's done, forget it. But don't forget this part. If we voted against, not for, that could be a flaw. You know, change is just a little bit too nebulous for me. It's just a little bit too open to interpretation. I'm afraid it may turn into, well, I thought the only ones that were going to be punished were the ones that we were ideologically opposed to. You mean we're going to be punished too? Oh, yeah. Yep, that's how divide and conquer works. Need I say more? No? Good. Let's get ready for Michael Rivero, coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. Please stand by. Michael Rivero is the webmaster of WhatReallyHappened.com and host of What Really Happened radio shows on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Formerly with NASA, Michael transitioned his image processing skills into the then-new motion picture computer animation field and has worked on such films as Star Trek, The Day After Tomorrow. He has supervised visual effects on Brain Scan, Lost, and Hawaii Five-O. Michael's foray into blogging began before the word was really even invented and happened almost by accident when he spotted a suspicious photograph being broadcast on ABC News in 1994 related to the death of White House Deputy Counsel Vincent Foster. Since that sudden beginning, Michael's website has expanded to cover diverse topics including the JFK assassination, the accidental shoot down of TWA 800, election fraud, health issues, Saddam's non-existent nukes, 9/11, the economy, and the lies used to trick the U.S. into wars of conquest in Afghanistan, Iraq, and now Iran. I can't wait. So please welcome upon the bridge, the global living room as it might be, our first-time guest, Michael Rivero. Good to have you, Michael.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Well, I'll tell you, it's a pleasure to have you here. When I was reading about you, you know, just doing research, it's like you've had quite an interesting career. So let's just you and me and a few million of our closest friends sit around and just tell us what you got.
Well, as you mentioned in that little bio of me, I didn't intend to become a peace activist and a blogger, but it did happen by accident back when Clinton was in office and the White House Deputy Counsel's body was found in Fort Marcy Park in Washington, D.C. And I really wasn't paying that much attention to it, but there was this photo that was put up on TV. And since I was working in visual effects and computer animation and film, the instant I saw that picture, I said, there are so many things wrong with this. It has to be a stage shot. And so I basically was talking around Hollywood with friends and showing the picture. And the next thing I know, my career had evaporated and we were getting death threats. And, you know, I basically fought back the only way I could, which was to basically continue putting up this information on my website. And eventually it broke off into its own website. And now, of course, it's whatreallyhappened.com.
That's very interesting. You know, earlier I saw an email from a friend. Calls himself the director. And this is what he had to allow. I'll say it very quickly. His sources, ex-feds from FEMA and DHS, tell us that the reason that the NDAA was passed was to frighten federal would-be whistleblowers into silence. So I think we're all familiar with those tactics.
Well, very much so. If you go back to the 1960s and you look at the history of the FBI's COINTELPRO, they were carrying out operations like that even back then. There was a very famous actress, Jean Seberg, who was speaking out for civil rights and other things that were very unpopular with the White House. They destroyed her career, and she ultimately committed suicide. So, yeah, it is a reality of life in the United States. It took me by surprise. At the time, I was still living in this world of illusion that I thought I understood what the United States was all about, and our government would never do things like this. And now, of course, I know otherwise.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It was some of the things that you were saying. Just, you know, they trigger little memories. And I remember as a teenager, it's like the only thing I knew about Vietnam was you know, what some of the older people that had friends that were in Vietnam, mostly people who had gotten in trouble and given the option of, well, do you want to do a year in jail for stealing those hubcaps or do you want to go to Nam? So they go, well, I'll join the service. have a good time and all that. Most of them came back special forces. It was very strange. And I was like, yeah, you know, America, right or wrong, let's go. Love it or leave it. Silent American. I'm behind this. Let's go. Let's defeat communism. I just thought, you know, I really was one of the, I hate to use this expression, but everybody knows what it means, the Jim Jones Kool-Aid drinker. I mean, I really was. I mean, the stuff's poison, and I'm drinking it.
Well, that's basically what it is. We're fed this constant diet by government and corporate media of basically telling us what will get us to do what they want us to do. And it works when you don't understand that that's what's going on. But I think especially in the wake of the exposure of the lie regarding Saddam's nuclear weapons, more and more Americans understand the corporate media and the government are lying. And so the Kool-Aid doesn't really taste all that good anymore, and fewer people are drinking it.
I'm thinking maybe these revelations, I mentioned this when I started the thing off, is, you know, we started off the year really divided. It got worse so as the election approached. But, you know, some things are becoming so ridiculously and undeniably clear that I have the feeling that the division between us is shrinking.
I would tend to agree with you. There are still a bunch of true believers out there. Actually, what it is, it's a form of denial, because we all want to be moral and just people and imagine that we would be heroic in standing up to a government that's gone wrong. But when you're actually confronted with that evidence that the government is doing bad things, then you have to decide what you're going to do about it. And to take action against an abusive, tyrannical government entails a certain amount of personal risk. But if you know what's going on, but you do nothing, then you have to surrender your self-image of being a good, moral human being. And so a lot of people, in order to avoid making that choice, they will desperately grasp any propaganda that's being fed to them. So they can go on thinking, I'm a just and moral human being. I would take action against injustice and evil. I just don't see a reason to do it right now. And that's where you get some of the people who are still out there saying, oh, yes, Iran is bad and we're right. And they're bordering on fanaticism in order to basically not deal with the reality of what's going on.
Well, yeah, this is a soundbite culture, too. I mean, you can. It's not only just a linear soundbite. Sometimes they edit a few fragments together to make a soundbite and let that go, and that's accepted as like it just rolled off the person's lips. It's really strange.
We see a lot of fraud like that. I know that the pro-war party that wants to invade Iran, they keep going back to this claim that Ahmadinejad said he wanted to wipe Israel off the map. That has been discredited time and time again. It is not what he said, but the corporate media still wants to sell it, saying he's evil, he's the bad one. I mean, Iran has not launched a war of aggression in over 200 years. They just want to be left alone. But, you know, there's this agenda to invade Iran, and it's all tied up with Iran's oil fields and reshackling them to the dollar. And they're just trying to find an excuse, something that will convince the American people, yes, we've got to endure yet more war against yet another country.
Yeah, they showed some interesting video of Ahmadinejad. This has been a while back, saying America needs to calm down, stop acting like such a big baby and so forth. And just the way that it was, you don't know if that's what he was really saying, you know, but they got him talking, and then an interpreter's relaying it to us in English.
Well, it's kind of interesting because we're looking at people like Ahmadinejad and Putin, and they seem to be trying to behave like adults, and our current leadership really seem to be acting more and more like spoiled children. We understand we're in a situation of dire economic circumstances, and this nation has a history of solving these economic problems by getting into these gigantic wars. Crash of 1907, get into World War I. Crash of 1929, get into World War II. Crash of 2008, we've invaded or regime changed 10 countries on two continents. Technically, we're already into World War III.
Nice. It's a great way to start off the new year. How long have we been in that state, actually?
You mean in the state of being in a world war? Well, obviously going back to 2003, and it was very interesting because General Wesley Clark was on video saying that when the war with Iraq was launched, he was shown a document listing all these countries the United States needed to conquer, and ending with Iran in 2008. So they're already 4 years behind their original plan, and they're still trying to find some way to get the American people to support the invasion of Iran.
All right. Michael, stand by. We're going to take a little break here and come back with our first-time guest tonight, Michael Rivero, whatreallyhappened.com on Coast to Coast AM. All right, I got to make a correction here. I got most of the words in, but not all of them. AR on AR-15 does not mean automatic rifle, nor does it mean assault rifle. It means Armalite. They built it originally. Colt got the patent, then they produced it. Armalite produced their own rifles. It looked just like them, various calibers. Okay. But there's a lot of that stuff out there, so very quickly I'll mention this to you. Heard news reports not even a week ago. They had, oh, I remember what it was. It was like, wow, how did this Fed's gun wind up down there in Mexico by this crime scene? And the guy said, it's a high-power semi-automatic pistol. Well, he's close. It's a Browning high power. You see? It's not necessarily high-powered. That's the name of it. It's a Browning high power. It's a relatively new gun. Let's see, I think it came out in 1935. Magazine holds 13 shots. And when this first insanity occurred, a friend of mine took his 15-shot magazines down, sold them for $150 a piece. Walked over to another table and picked up two 13-round Browning high power magazines for $36 for both of them. So, look, it's stupid. And if you fall for this, I think maybe somebody should send Senator Feinstein a letter that says, tell you what, honey, when you give up your bodyguards, your armed guards, which we pay for, by the way, then we'll disarm ourselves, okay? We'll just all hold hands. It'll be great. One last thing, and that's when you hear somebody say, we discovered a Fenn rifle. It's not a Fenn rifle. It's just an FN rifle. Fabrique Nationale de Armes de Guerre. Herstal Belgique. Okay, we good? All right, right back with Michael Rivero on the one and only Saturday night edition of Coast to Coast AM. Thank you. Michael Rivero, his website, whatreallyhappened.com. Michael, I'm sorry to make you wait so long. We got to do these breaks, though, or the computer just makes us sit in the corner until it's finished doing its thing. You know, I was looking at this, I guess it's the Zapruder film. And you see the driver turn around and shoot with a pistol into the back seat. And I looked at it, I looked at it, I looked at it, I looked at it, and I thought, I'll tell you what, if that's bogus, it's good, real good. I'm sure you've seen this piece of video.
I have, and if you look very carefully, it is a lot more blurry than other examples of the Zapruder film. And anytime you see somebody blurring something, it's usually to cover up the artifacts of a deception.
Right.
And, you know, obviously, you know, if you're talking about assassinating the president, you want the assassins as far away from the victim as possible, because everyone's going to be looking at the victim. And if the assassin is standing right next to them or sitting right next to them, that increases your danger of detection and discovery. And so I don't really put much credibility in that particular piece of film.
It's interesting. Say, let's make a rapid transition here. I have maintained that Facebook is, you know, it was a little bit fun in the beginning and all that, but it became obvious in about, I don't know, 15 minutes that this is like the greatest tool for isolating a person you could ever hope to have someone, you know, commit themselves to on basically your behalf. So what's happened with Facebook, and now why is it a new and improved concern?
Well, I wouldn't use the word improved. And what's funny about this whole incident is I don't actually use Facebook much myself, other than to help promote stories that I think the public needs to be aware of. But last Thursday, when I started prepping for my own show, I signed on to a blog to post a message using my Facebook ID, and it came back and said, your ID has been blocked. And I went to Facebook, and it said, your account is locked. The mechanism by which I was supposed to restart it was set up so obscurely that it could not be made to work. And then readers started sending into my webpage that they were going through their lists of people they were following, and it turned out that all of these various political activists, 9/11 truth movement, pro-gun people, were all being shut down. At least 50 that we know of, the accounts were blocked. And, of course, it created a big stink all over the Internet, and it went viral. And the reason we were concerned is if you go back and you look at the 9/11 incident, in the weeks before 9/11 actually happened, the FBI was going around the United States and shutting down the websites of Muslim charities. And looking back, the intent was to make sure there was not going to be very many voices getting onto the internet saying, hey, let's not jump to conclusions that it was Arab Muslims. And so we know how eager the U.S. government and Israel are to ignite a war against Iran, and they may be panicked enough to be considering a new false flag attack. And obviously, if the online activists are being interfered with, blocked, that could be a warning flag. Now, Friday, because of the publicity associated with it, Facebook turned all the accounts back on. So I'm not as concerned about a false flag as I was at the moment. But we do need to be on guard for indications that communication within the alternative media, actually I like to call them the independent media, are being interfered with ahead of some new big stunt to try and get everybody all hot and bothered to do another war.
So the public perception, I guess what I mean by that is the news goo that everybody seems to know a little bit about, maybe not in detail, but they know enough to maybe be conversing in it for a couple of minutes. It seems as though the only people that really buy into what the mainstream media tells them are the politicians, and it becomes this sort of feedback loop. It's almost as though the politicians put out there what the agenda that they want to do. Then along comes an incident. The news media covers it a certain way. And then the politicians pick that up and advance the ball a little farther. Then the news media picks that up and is like, oh, well, this has become a matter of some great concern. And it's really a symbiotic relationship. They rely on each other, which tells me that they own each other.
Well, very much so. It's a mutually reinforcing illusion, or as George W. Bush put it, they got to catapult the propaganda forward. They're still hoping that Americans see the corporate media as somehow separate from the government, a watchdog on government abuse, which is their traditional role. But they are working very much hand in glove. And the government will say something, the media will say, oh, yes, we agree with that. And then the government will say, see, the media is now saying exactly the same thing. That's how they built up all this hysteria about Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. We were getting the dodgy dossier. They could gas us in 45 minutes warning. And, of course, in the aftermath of that invasion, it turned out there never had been any weapons of mass destruction. Iraq had been firmly in compliance with the United Nations resolution, and it was all a huge lie. And I think because of the scale of the lie, that is really the watershed moment where Americans woke up and realized that they should be very skeptical of anything the government and the corporate media is saying. And even beyond that, prudence demands we start going back and looking at everything we've ever been told by the corporate media and the government, and re-examine it for truth here, whether it was whether Pearl Harbor was really a surprise or not. We know now there actually were no torpedoes in the Gulf of Tonkin that was used to escalate the war in Vietnam. We know that it was not a Spanish mine in Havana Harbor that sank the USS Maine. The list just goes on and on and on. And eventually you come to the conclusion that Americans are the most lied to people on the face of the earth. But now they know it, and that means the lies are nowhere near as effective as they used to be.
You know, nobody wants to be, forced to pull out their crystal ball. But do you think this has gone too far? Or do you think there's some way to maybe right the ship? And at least, you know, if you can't, even some people who may have... just flagrantly and blatantly broken the Constitution and maybe even done some stuff that would be even treasonous. You can't do anything about it. Is there some way to bring pressure on these people to at least maybe leave and don't get back into politics ever again?
Well, I hate to be the bearer of a negative view here as we head into the new year. I've been doing this for 18 years now, and I started out with that very attitude that if we could create a public climate that would encourage the government back to the republic, and that would be a very gentle, peaceful way to do it. But at this point, I think it is too far gone. The financial sector is too dominant in our country, and this whole rush to all of these wars is all to prop up the dollar. And how much time do we have before this next break?
Oh, you know, easily 5 or 6 minutes.
All right. Well, just real quick, all of this that we're seeing here, Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and the rest, goes back to the end of World War II with what was called the Bretton Woods Agreement, which made the dollar the global reserve and trade currency. It took over from the British pound. And the other nations of the world agreed to Bretton Woods on the condition that the dollar would always be exchanged for gold at $35 an ounce, and that the U.S. government would refrain from overprinting dollars to basically debase it and loot the other nations of the world for real products and produce and so forth. Well, of course, the Federal Reserve proceeded to overprint the dollar, and so by 1970, France was looking at this huge stack of these paper notes building up in their vaults. And they notified the United States they were going to convert their Federal Reserve notes back to gold at $35 an ounce. Well, it turned out France had more paper notes than the U.S. had gold. So Nixon shut down gold convertibility, said it was temporary. Of course, it was not. This put severe downward pressure on the U.S. dollar. And so the U.S. government went to all of the oil-producing nations in OPEC, and they said, we'll make you a deal. We will protect you militarily from your enemies. And in exchange, you will sell your oil only for dollars. And that way, it became known as the petrodollar. And then all of a sudden, as Israel got aggressive and started invading other countries, these Arab oil nations realized the United States could not keep their petrodollar promise. So they started saying, we're going to sell our oil for other currencies than the dollar, which is being inflated, its value is being inflated away anyway. Iraq got permission from the United Nations to sell their oil for euros in 2002. 2003, the U.S. invades. Libya says, we're going to sell our oil for the gold dinar. U.S. invades there. And basically, it's the dollarification of all of these world's resource-rich areas in order to drag the world back to Bretton Woods. But the rest of the world really doesn't want to go. But that's really what the top agenda behind all of these military adventures is for the U.S. to control these resource-rich areas in order to shackle them to the dollar to sort of keep our little Ponzi scheme private central bank going a little bit longer. The Pentagon just announced they're sending U.S. troops now into 35 nations of Africa because that is the world's largest still undeveloped resource-rich area.
You know, very little in this world is fair. I mean, some of it's fair with an E on the end, but not necessarily fair and square. But just in the interest of adding a little balance. Now, when somebody says, Michael, you sound anti-Semitic to me. What's all this about Israel invading other countries?
Well, explain. Again, like I said earlier, Iran has not launched a war of aggression in over 200 years, but Israel is constantly attacking other countries. So is the United States. It's not anti-Semitic to say that the government of Israel follows a war policy against Syria, against Lebanon, against Egypt, and continuously against Palestine and Gaza. So it has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is hating somebody because of their race or ethnicity, and what we're dealing with here are behaviors. It is the actions of Israel that are criticism. I hate to mention another website, but if you go over to Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman has this wonderful video with this former Israeli minister, and Amy asks this minister about the topic of anti-Semitism, and this former Israeli minister admits it's just a trick. It's just something we shout at people to get them to shut up when we can't really answer their questions. And again, we now know it's a trick. They've overused the word so much, it doesn't really have the shock value that it used to have.
I got you. All right. Well, strong cases. I'll tell you, we have a listenership that is, they're all over the place in their, you know, in their views. And they, you know, when they got a question, they'll bring it right up into your face. So I just thought we'd go ahead and just take care of that right off the bat, because you know, a lot of things are open to misinterpretation. Right then. Well, so back to Facebook. Just for a minute.
Okay.
Participate in it or not? I'm thinking not. I don't like being tagged all over the place. I mean, unless you want to say, here, take this picture and from here, I'll leave my phone with you and you can tag me in a bunch of pictures. But it's not, you know, you can't really see that it's me, and then that way they can track me that way, but I won't be there. I'm not sure I like having a social network track me all over the place.
Well, I don't either, and like I said, I don't actually use it all that much, which was why it was almost amusing that they were trying to just basically block my account. Right now, of course, since the IPO, Facebook has definitely gone into a total for-profit mode, and they're trying to find any single way they can commercialize the data that people are putting up on Facebook. We know that the government is data mining it, trying to build information about individuals. I don't know if that's going to work, because especially singles looking for their soulmates, they tend to fib a lot on Facebook. So I'm not sure that the information in the data mining is going to be all that reliable anyway.
Oh, gotcha. Yes, I suppose there is that bending the truth thing a little bit, you know. All right, then. But you can't. And what about Twitter now? You can't. Can you do Twitter without a Facebook account?
Yes, you can.
Okay. Well, do you find the same problems with it, or do you find that a useful tool, or do you even use it?
Yeah, I do use it. Again, it's strictly a one-way situation. When I see a story come through my website that I think needs wider distribution to the public, I'll put it out on Twitter. But I'm not really following a lot of people. I don't even know how many are following me. I'm using it more as a broadcast medium than any kind of a networking system.
And I'll tell you what, we've got a little bit of time here. We've got a long way to go, Michael, because that was a really fast hour. We've got about, I don't know, 3.5 minutes or so, so let's use them. The bankers, in my opinion, the bankers run the world. The bankers and the multinational corporations.
Agreed.
So they don't really care which side they work in these wars.
No, they don't.
In fact, they work both sides sometimes.
They absolutely do. I mean, remember, Brown Brothers Harriman in New York City was financing Hitler's rise to power right up to the day the war opened. What does they say? Wars are the banker's harvest. Bankers love wars. It drives everybody into debt. They don't even really care which side wins or loses, because everybody, victor and vanquished, are deep in debt to the banks for 50, 100 years after.
All right, then, let's go ahead and roll on. Let's roll on the Federal Reserve for a minute. It's been alleged repeatedly that five banks make up the Federal Reserve right over there on Manhattan Island. And, well, we only got 2 minutes here, but I'll tell you what. Just give us a quick rundown. Why is the Federal Reserve a Ponzi scheme?
Well, actually, any private central bank that issues the public currency as a loan at interest is a pyramid scheme, because it creates more debt than money with which to pay that debt. And the only way to keep the system going is you have to constantly find larger and larger pools of new borrowers to create new money, which circulates through commerce and pays the interest on the old money. But when you run out of that new, wider pool of borrowers, the whole system comes crashing down. And that's why it is a Ponzi scheme or a pyramid scheme.
Unbelievable. And people what? Go ahead.
No, and, you know, people need to understand that this is exactly the same kind of bank system we fought a revolution to be free of, because the Bank of England was being run the same way back at that time.
Mm-hmm. All right, when we come back from this break, I'm going to ask Michael Rivero, if the U.S. were to lose a war, would the bankers care? I have a feeling I know what his answer is going to be. Thanks for being with us. This is the Saturday Night Edition of Coast to Coast AM.